At KFC, everyday value meets big flavor. That means getting 6 crispy pieces of delicious dark meat drums and thighs, plus 4 biscuits, all for just $10 with our Dine and Dash deal. All that juicy, original recipe chicken for only 10 bucks every day. Now that's finger-lickin' good. Hurry into KFC and taste the deal we're cooking up. Limited time only. Prices and participation may vary. While supplies last, tax, tip, and fees extra. Not available on third-party ordering platforms.
Hello and welcome to the Undercut Podcast. I'm your host, Jesse Billington, and we're back to review the 9th round of the 2025 Formula One season, the Spanish Grand Prix. To do this, I'm joined by Mr. Timo Albers-Daly. How are you?
I'm well, thank you, Mr. Billington. How about yourself?
I'm clinging on to the thin thread of life of which I inhabit. I think that's as far as I need to go with that statement, as little evidence that needs to be added to it.
Fair enough. Let's move on.
Yeah, I think we ought to. There's a Spanish Grand Prix to look at, and not my actions over the weekend. There's far more interesting actions of equally dubious nature. Most importantly, the next Spanish Grand Prix cannot host the Porsche Super Cup because there's one of the support races that regularly happens because of noise limits. If you've ever attended a Formula One weekend with the full swathe of support races, F3, F2, Super Cup, you'll note the F1 is usually one of the quieter series. Formula 2 and Super Cup are some of the loudest when they thunder around, and the Med Ring, where we're heading to in Madrid, has a 90 decibel sound limit for the nearby residents, which means that unless they bring in additional exhaust tip baffles, Porsche Super Cup won't get to run around the new circuit. And I really do question whether they actually get to see Formula 2 there as well, because it is not a quiet series. Neither is F3, for that matter.
Well, I'm going to suggest either F3 comes in as a replacement, or it's an F1 Academy round instead, or we just don't really have much of a sport series there. And oh, is this just another way of saying that maybe they haven't thought this whole thing through? I couldn't possibly comment, but yes.
Yeah, it begs a lot of questions, like how badly did you think it out when you sort of went, we're going to build one right on the edge of the city of Madrid. Great. What are the noise limits you're allowed? 90 decibels.
I do quite like, by the way, that you can't do that in Madrid for reasons, but Baku, you can do F2 and F3, which you'd think there'd be more of a reasoning to not do it somewhere like that, but they're perfectly fine with it.
For length, when GP2 went to Valencia, that was when it was Ricardo Tormo, so a proper circuit as opposed to the street circuit. I don't know, did the street circuit we used to have in Spain as the European Grand Prix,
Valencia, I don't remember having anything there, but that was also a long time ago at this point.
Yeah, very different times. But yeah, you get the F2 over at Baku. I'm trying to think of other, of Monaco. Surely they must have some noise limits in Monaco as well, that they somehow...
Or they just go, this is what we're known for, we'll just allow it.
Yeah. Yeah, you don't move to Monaco now and get surprised when all of a sudden the Formula One appears. I'm trying to think of other street circuits that would probably...
Melbourne, that had a thing back in the day of you could hear the F1 cars from across the city. And again, if they're quiet now, you still have F2 and F3 there the last couple of years. That's perfectly legitimate. Just interesting why... Yeah, that's a curious thing as to why Madrid is suddenly going, oh, actually...
Yeah, they put in this huge bid to have a Formula One race and then gone, but it's got to be a quiet Formula One race. Formula E. You were thinking of Formula E, you idiots.
I was about to say, are you thinking of Formula E?
But yeah, there we go.
We didn't know Carlos Sainz was in Formula E. Which team does he drive for? Williams are in Formula E. There's a lot more to this than we realised. Are you sure you're not getting this confused with Formula One? No. Trust us. We know what we're talking about.
We want a quiet racing series and we want Carlos Sainz. Okay, well, his Dakar truck is a hybrid, so just have him do some laps. There we go. You've ticked your box. It's not the right Carlos Sainz.
Put that with the Formula E cars and just watch it crush all of them.
Yeah, just every time it has.
I'm going to overtake you by driving over you.
Yeah, literally an overtake. But anyway, that's the important and interesting news that's also sort of kind of punctually relevant, because of course we're talking about the Spanish Grand Prix. This is quite possible. This is the last time we're going to go to Barcelona, isn't it?
As far as I'm aware, yes.
They didn't make a fuss of it over the weekend, did they?
I was very much going to channel my inner Clarkson there and go, oh no, anyway.
But it did produce an interesting race this time round, and we'll dive into that when we get to our team-by-team analysis. We've got a new order to do them in this time as well, which is very exciting. But we kick off with McLaren. Piastri qualified on pole, Norris qualified second, and that is the order in which they came home.
Pretty much. Not much to add here, really. Piastri, back to being clinical. He needed this after the last two Grand Prix, I think, and Norris was also driving a bit more long-term thinking in mind, which was good for him. We don't often see, and now we've got 10 points kind of separating the two of them in Piastri's favour, of course. So business as usual for the top two out front in this championship.
Yeah, just a very clean performance from McLaren overall as a team. If you take both Oscar and Lando and put them into the constructors table, they're both still P1 and P2 there as well. It's like a huge gap they've got to the next team, let alone sort of when you combine their points. This is the first McLaren front row lockout since David Coulthard and Mika Hakkinen in 1998. First Spanish Grand Prix win for the team since Kimi Raikkonen in 2005 as well. Just really perfect extraction from the weekend, great proof that their wings were fine. Like, we went into this weekend, technical directive 18, oh, they're going to get done with the flexi wings.
We got an extra 10 minutes out of our preview podcast just on that nonsense alone, and it did absolutely nothing.
It did nothing. If anything, but the results have certainly shaken up the constructor's order as it stands. But yeah, just sort of everyone went, oh, maybe we've got a bit more of a problem than if their wings are fine and they're that quick. It's a hot weekend. We know they've got a good cooling package as well, which really helps them keep the tyres in the window. Oscar's pace and focus, absolutely phenomenal again. And Lando, yeah, recovered well off a bit of a dodgy start and, yeah, keeps a solid gap to Oscar ahead. So it's all round. If you're Papaya, you're coming away from this game, this is it. Next with points, job done next.
I think one of my favourite points from the weekend was in qualifying, where Lando clearly used Oscar as a co to start his push lap. Not only did Oscar then call him out for it in a kind of tongue-in-cheek way, but then went out by himself without a toe and set an even quicker time just to help with the mind games of it all. It was very, very Piastri, and I did enjoy that.
Yeah, it was very Piastri, but again, he's just got that competence and confidence in the car at the moment that's, bar Lando on a good day, absolutely unparalleled. And it's enjoyable to watch because, sort of like the early days of Max Verstappen's supremacy, we were sort of going, how far can you push this as a package? Like when we were seeing Verstappen just absolutely disappearing up the road, you're thinking, how much further can they extend this? And starting to see that now with Oscar Piastri, as young as he is and with as much sort of blue sky thinking ahead of him as possible, there's a lot to be explored. So it's an exciting time looking to the future as well. But as the season rolls on, if you're wearing orange, this is a very good time. Also a very good weekend if you're wearing red, because Ferrari now into second place in the constructors. Hamilton qualified fifth, finished sixth, and Leclerc qualified seventh, but would finish P3.
I don't think this is as bad as Ferrari seemed to think it is. Definitely Lewis. I mean, he came out with this ridiculous quote of saying it was the worst race he's ever had, and I can think of at least three that definitely went worse than this. Just reminded me a bit of Imola, but the other way around, really, with kind of the starting positions and the finishing positions for the pair of them. But like you say, they're P2 in the standings now, so overall, they're better. They're moving in the right direction. Great opening moves by both drivers, thinking we don't know quite how this is going to unfold. We might want to capitalize as quickly as possible. They did. And, okay, got past Lewis Hamilton at the end of the Grand Prix, which is not a sentence many people thought would be something to be said at any point, quite frankly, this year.
Lots of EP2.
Well, no. That's going back just a little bit. But I think new and better tyres crucially were apparently why Hulk could get past him as easily as he did. And at that point, fair play to Hulk. I think if it had been a different driver and even maybe a different team, we'd have all been a bit more admiring about it. But because it's Hulk, we don't really mind. And they're 6 points clear of Mercedes now. So that's nice for them, especially for Lewis. And okay, 197-ish point gap to McLaren. That's going to be a bit trickier to break down. But at the same time, McLaren, they're going to have to make a mistake at some point. Those two drivers, I'll be amazed if they don't come together at least once over the course of the year. And I'm not saying that that's going to mean that gap is going to massively reduce and Ferrari can become Constructors' Championships, but it's a little bit like fighting Alex Palou in IndyCar. You're going to need more than one bad result for him to catch up to him, but you'll take the opportunities where you can. And at least Ferrari are looking, dare I say it, as if they're moving in the right direction to be doing that. So just chip away, and you never know what might happen towards the end of the season. We've still got a long way to go. We are only at the end of race nine, bear in mind. So there's plenty of things that could happen between now and the end of Abu Dhabi. So your Ferrari, I think the Lando Norris approach of self-criticism is perhaps working much better for them than it is for him.
Yes, yeah, they've been very critical of themselves recently and very focused. One of the interesting things that did come out of the weekend was the fact that Charles Leclerc not didn't hamper his qualifying, because obviously fairly decent start of Q7, but he went through qualifying and Parc Fermé with a setup that he knew would be more beneficial come the race. And we did see that. That's why they obviously had the swap of the cars, because they knew that Charles' car was ultimately going to be faster. So it shows that there is an understanding of how that car behaves, why it behaves the way it does at
An
certain
understanding of
circuits.
strategy as well, which
Yeah,
is
and
even rarer.
this forward-thinking nature of sort of going, okay, so that we know that there is a second part to this weekend after qualifying. Should we plan for that as well? Yes. And that's good signs. And again, if we're going to have anyone go along and start fighting McLaren, Ferrari are in a good team to go and do it. We do love a Ferrari-McLaren battle. Think sort of Alonso Hamilton-Raikkonen, think Prost-Senna. We've got great sort of McLaren-Ferrari rivalries over the years, and we could have an
Well,
interesting one
Schumacher.
emerge. Yeah, we could have an interesting one emerge towards the end of this season if they keep this pace up. So yeah, Lewis still getting to grips with the car, like you said, the tire strategy, the huge delta offset to Hülkenberg at the end of that race really sort of made it look worse than it was, I think.
Also made potentially easier for them if the second Red Bull car keeps doing what it's doing, if Max Verstappen keeps doing what he's doing, and if Mercedes continue to have the issues that they're having, even if it's not on pure merit that Ferrari would find themselves in these podium positions or race wins even, but that's a lot of points to potentially hoover up just by kind of quietly going about your business and segue doing a bit of a George Russell about it and just flying under the radar.
Yeah, George Russell. Well, we'll get to Mercedes then with Russell qualifying fourth, finishing fourth. Antonelli qualifying sixth, fairly good outing, but unfortunately, was it a mechanical failure that eventually sent him off or at the end of the back straight by the look of things?
Yeah, the car just went. I think the engine died, I think, was what they said in commentary. And it conveniently on a straight bit of track and with a nice gravel trap, and Antonelli knew immediately, just could just steer it in, immediately got out. He was already kind of taking the steering off almost before it was kind of at a complete rest and just hopped on out. And I just thought, he's just going to just run. He's just going to go. He's just going to leave the biggest bottle, go to the airport, just go home. No, that's done. I'm out of here. But I know who to blame for the technical stuff.
Who?
Alpine.
Why?
They are so incredibly French at this point that they have not only infected themselves with it, with their performance, but they've now infected their future engine partners for next year.
Ah.
And it's reverberating back and impacting the Mercedes. And in this case, Antonelli, very unfortunate for him because, as you say, he was doing quite well up to that point. They're going to want to get on top of these technical gremlins, and maybe getting rid of Alpine's the way to do it.
Yeah, it's interesting that that's
It's a conspiracy theory you can subscribe to.
someone might want to subscribe to that. Whether or not it's worth subscribing to that conspiracy theory is up for discussion. But yeah, Mercedes looking like a fairly strong contender through the early part of the season, because Red Bull was still sort of struggling to find a second driver, and Ferrari had a bit of a
Still are.
woeful opening few rounds. But they've just sort of. Ferrari have picked up their form fairly consistently since Miami. Red Bull still struggling to figure out what to do with that second car. And it's another low scoring weekend for Mercedes. You're sort of looking at it going, oh, it's going to be a rough fight for sort of third place if Red Bull keeps screwing around and Mercedes keeps suffering from problems. But yeah,
You're
Russell's
Williams, you're looking at that and thinking,
slowly catching on to from Russell
I'm
there.
not going to get ahead of myself here, but I'm going to keep an eye on that in the distance there. It's very much kind of Fernando Alonso deck chair, just kind of putting down the glass and going, oh, okay, we're just gonna we'll keep an eye on it.
keep an eye on that, see how it develops and see what comes of it. But yeah, speaking of George Russell's performance, we're obviously about to talk about Red Bull as well. We might as well talk about that incident as well on track. And we'll get into, as we get into Red Bull as well, the fact that when Max's cage is rattled, he's properly rattled.
Yeah, it was curious because we haven't seen that extreme a version of him since 2021, really. We saw glimmers here and there, but it seemed that he'd gotten over it and it was contained to just the odd angry.
Mornings can start feeling the same. Wake up, brush teeth, go to work. But with breakfast from Wendy's, it's like, wake up, brush teeth, baconate with a breakfast baconator, roll with the sausage breakfast burrito, buddy it up with a honey buddy, or get seasoned with seasoned potatoes, and then go to work. Sorry. When you're ready for a fresh wake-up call, gotta be Wendy's.
At participating U.S. Wendy's during breakfast hours.
Outburst on team radio, the odd sake thing, which we love. But it was no more than that, whereas this was something else. And yeah, George Russell, interestingly, the stewards, and that's a whole other separate conversation, they'd had him at fault for the turn one incident with Verstappen. So the way that Team Red Bull went about deciding to give Russell the place back when they didn't need to, and it would have kind of sorted itself out had Max got his way, probably didn't help things. But at the same time, he knows better. He's capable of better. So regardless of the fact that he apologized a day after, and obviously the stuff happens in heat at the moment, it doesn't really get him off the hook for me. And a 10-second penalty for that is ridiculous when you think about it. I mean, go back to 97, Schumacher drove into
the side of Villeneuve.
Oh, Villeneuve, that was right. Okay, that's why I didn't remember. It's kind of null minds. But the principle is there, don't deliberately drive into people. And he didn't get a 10-second penalty. He got disqualified from the entire championship.
Yeah.
And interestingly, how inflation hasn't worked there in terms of time passing. And surely it should be even worse now, in theory, if not at least the same. So I'd be very curious to see how that pans out. And we've always said, and rightly so, that there is just wild inconsistency from the stewards with regards to penalties. And that's not just in F1, that's across all of the series that we watch where they're involved. And if you're a driver, you're going to wonder, what can you get away with? You still wonder that in a lot of ways. We saw it in IndyCar as well. I mean, I know they're not FIA, but there was kind of one penalty for one driver, different same penalty. Or a different penalty for a different driver for the same thing. And you go, well, I don't understand how you're doling these out. They're situational and they're situational. And this does send the wrong message. And I think George summed it up quite nicely in one of his post-race comments, was saying, I ultimately benefited. I don't really care too much. Luckily, it wasn't too bad. But that's not really the point. And also look at the example he's meant to be setting to all the fans and all the next generation drivers that look up to him. Quite tongue-in-cheek amusing, I suppose, that comes up a week after the whole comment from, was it Victor Martins to Alex Dunlop, who does he think he is, Max Verstappen, go, oh, please don't imitate him next time. Again, that's not what we meant. That's not the inspiration we want you to take from that. And that's the kind of thing that it could kind of retro kind of apply to in that sense, you know?
And as much as I don't know if the rules when it comes to Formula One are supposed to be set on precedent or not, but if there is a precedent set for,
I think that's part of the problem. We don't know.
But if the precedent is now set that you can just basically dive bomb it up the inside, clatter into another guy, take a 10-second penalty, and then just sort of strategy your way out of it. If you did it on what wasn't like the dying laps of a race, you could just sort of work your way around that through a race and sort of have a solution. And
again, the fact that he's still got a point out of it as well,
yeah,
definitely sends the wrong message. You'd think at least then go, oh, just have a quick look at the time page and go, we need to send him a message. He can't get any points out of this. Where's Lawson? Okay, 20 seconds then. So that there's a principle, 15, whatever, you know, the appropriate. Oh, he just missed out. What a shame. Maybe he shouldn't have done that then. Whereas this way, he still gets a point. And I'm not saying he's going to win the championship by a point, but for a rare scenario where that does happen, It'll be some interesting conversations at that point.
Yeah, it's just such a baffling thing that they seem to have given him sort of the same penalty you'd get for like going off track and gaining an advantage or sort of track limits several times over. It's just sort of you put your life and the life of another driver at risk by intentionally causing a collision. That for me
You
feels like
can't even argue it was an accident or anything. It's not kind of a, oh, did he brake test me sort of Baku Vettel Hamilton situation where you're trying to see, oh, what was the deal? It was no, he drove straight into him.
He just tried to T-bone George Russell, and you sort of look at it and go, I don't think a 10-second penalty is strict enough, and I will agree with you on that. But again, like you said, he's when George says, look at the role model he's supposed to be for future drivers. We've already mentioned Schumacher, who was sort of a part of Max's life growing up, and we look at the way that
And
Schumacher.
again, not what you're meant to take from
Yes.
that.
But we can see that potentially there is, like I'd said previously, precedent for the fact that F1 drivers do have role
Yeah.
models they emulate. And think back to Schumacher Hill, 1994, which would have been in Adelaide.
Adelaide.
Yeah. And Hill doesn't know Schumacher's got a problem, goes for a little gap, and just Schumacher turns into him and just goes, nope, not having that. It's history isn't necessarily circular, but it certainly goes over the same path every now and then. But elsewhere,
It's I was going to say, there's one person who's going to be quite happy about this though, and that's Albon, because he now might be off the hook with Russell for a bit after the Monaco fiasco. So now that Verstappen's done this to him, Russell's attention is going to be firmly focused on him instead.
yeah, I don't think Max Verstappen's taking George Russell out for dinner and letting him order the lobster pasta, though.
Oh, I'd love to, but that could be a prize at an auction though,
What
where
dinner
you get
with
to be
George
a fly
Russell?
on the wall watching those two go to dinner together and Max has to pay the bill. That
That
would be a lot of money for charity.
I would pay handsomely to be a spectator for that. Yeah, Verstappen qualified third, as we already said, finished 10th, so he earns 1 point for his efforts this weekend. Yuki.
26 points separating those two now. And if Max is gone for a race weekend for mysterious circumstances, and Russell has the Grand Prix weekend of a season, that could get quite fun as well then, because potentially with his positioning in the championship and Verstappen's contract, if Russell could be the reason to trigger all of that, that could also get quite spicy.
Do you think that Max was hoping for a few more penalty points as well? Because well, obviously Canada's the next circuit, but also Le Mans is just around the corner. We know that Max.
We know what I predicted for Canada. I'm really close to getting it.
Yeah, we know that Max really enjoys his endurance and sports car racing. So I was just like, ah, oh, he wanted 4 penalty points on his license there, really. But yeah, Yuki Tsunoda qualified 19th, finished P13. I think they were running again. It was an experimental setup. This is the official line for Red Bull. They were running more wing to try and go faster. I'm like, that's not how that works, and you know that. I know that Adrian Newey's not there, but
So you're covering.
you know that adding more wing makes the car slower. And Barcelona is a high-speed circuit with some big high-speed corners.
Yeah, it's one of those things that, let's say that that is a legitimate reason for argument. It's not, but let's assume, even with that, all the same, it should be better overall in race pace in qualifying, because than where he currently is, especially with all of that experience from one. This isn't like just you could maybe understand if it was Lawson, if it was Hadjar, if it was a relatively new driver, but for Yuki, it's kind of. It's awkward because he does have all this experience. He's been talking the talk for so long. He's in that seat, and it's definitely more difficult than he thought it would be. And I appreciate that anyone who's in Max's happen might struggle in that car and has proven to struggle at some point. But at the same time, there are cars ahead of him in this order, especially this weekend, to have no right being not only like a place or two in front of him, but several in front of him. And that's going to cause issues for everyone involved. At some point soon, and you do wonder how soon that's going to become more of an issue. And if you're Isaac Hadjar, I know you're going to be tempted, but I'll
Don't
say
do
it. I sort of want to say it again. Don't bloody do it. Stay where you are. You've got a better career trajectory if you just stay right where you are. Let them find someone else.
I think I'm correct.
Lawson, stay where you are, by the way, as well. That's not an invitation for you either.
Yeah, I think I'm correct in saying that over the triple header we've just had, Isaac Hadjar has successfully outscored, I think, Verstappen. I think I'm correct in saying that.
I can check that one. I know he's outscored others, but...
So let's see. Imola, Verstappen obviously wins. Monaco, he gets 12 points. Spain, he gets one. So that's what, 37, 38 points. Hadjar gets 2, 8, 16. So he scores 16 points. Okay, no. So he's... But he's definitely...
You pulled that from somewhere.
Yeah, I don't know what my brain was doing there. I was like, where on earth have I thought of that one from? Edit that out, or I'll leave it in because I'm an idiot. But he's outscored essentially the other Red Bull and his teammate combined across the three weekends. He's just on an absolute roll when it comes to form and performance, and Red Bull will be looking at him with itchy fingers going, come on, come on, come on, do it, say yes. And it won't go well for him. There is something off about that second seat, about the way the team operates around it, about there's something functionally wrong in that team if whatever driver you put in there cannot get results. Look, how far back does this argument have to go?
I'm glad you asked that question, because whilst we're doing Hail Marys, the last driver to actually get something decent out of that seat was Daniel Ricciardo. Stick him in after the summer break just for the sake of it. We all wanted it in the first place, just to see if he still had it. He just wanted to see if he still had it, and he said himself, if I don't have it, I'll go. Get a great test at Silverstone. Let's just see. Let's just see. If we're gonna throw all the cards at the wall and see what happens, then why not? You know?
I'm not against it. It needs someone that is prepared to properly wrestle that car, and also someone who's willing to...
There's also not a junior driver. It's not just an experienced driver. It's a proven Grand Prix winner. The last guy could take it to Max at his own team. The guy who beat Vettel fair and square. You know, if he can't do it, fair enough. If he can, maybe you should have redone a few things back in a couple of years ago that we all probably could have told you to do at the time anyway, but hey, what do we know? We're just fans.
Yeah, it's just baffling decision after baffling decision when it comes to that seat, and I want to know what's going on inside to cause such a huge rift. Like, even if you go back to Gasly, Albon, and then obviously Perez, yes, and then Lawson, and now Tsunoda. Like, you look at those five drivers, and Albon and Perez proved to be a very good driver, but Albon especially, look at what he's able to do in that Williams at the moment. He's absolutely on the money. It's not like he's a driver that would have been just that far off the pace. And also, there were some results that Albon really should have had better, but there was circumstance that got in the way. Usually circumstances.
You could say that for any driver, though. They're all going to have a two or three here and there, you know, where you should have been able to do better, but for some reason,
yeah,
fate decided otherwise.
Yeah, and I think the latter part of potentially Perez's seasons with them wasn't great, but they were decent drivers going through there. I know Perez had a drop-off in form, but certainly like 2021 and 2022 Perez was absolutely on the money. And then all of a sudden the team goes, okay, we've found our form. We can just turn down the number two or just start fucking around with it and see what happens. It's absolutely baffling. And I'm just constantly left wondering why. Because you're a team. The idea is you win the team's constructors' championship. At the moment, you could finish fourth. That's not great. Meanwhile, obviously, we mentioned Max Verstappen, his crash. He's obviously earned some penalty points. We've joked about him getting a race ban. Probably worth mentioning, the other important bit of news is that Nicolas Lacorte in Formula 3 has not only got a race ban, he's still got 2 points left over when he returns after the Austrian Grand Prix rounds. So, yeah, there are other bans and other bits and pieces going on as well, which are just as exciting. But, yeah, it's Red Bull. I'm baffled by, more so than ever.
Constantly baffled, but even by our own expectations, even more baffled.
Yeah, our expectations were low, but holy shit. Meanwhile, Williams, where our expectations have been high for the past few weekends, and yeah, unfortunately, this one, Albon qualifies 11th, DNFs early on after contact with Lawson, which was a bit of a clumsy one from Lawson, really, and then Sainz qualified 17th, finished 14th.
Still don't mind that kind of thing from Lawson, because it needs to be rendered out and needs to improve on it, but he's got the right idea with his style of racing. It just needs to be tidied up a bit. So, yeah. But, yeah, the rest of Williams, there isn't an awful lot of good stuff to say. However, there is one interesting fact, and there is also an amusing fact. Both came at the same time during FP1, where Victor Martins obviously was driving in place of Alex Albon for his mandatory, well, not mandatory, but his FP1 kind of session, he became the first French driver since Alain Prost in 1993 to drive a Williams. That is how long it has been for that. But the amusing part of it is that, obviously, this is Victor Martin's Formula One debut. He outperformed Franco Colapinto.
Which, when you consider the performance that is apparently in that Alpine, when we look at where Gasly finished, and if that's where Colapinto's sort of getting the car, and this is where debutant Victor Martins is putting the Williams, you sort of go, okay, so these are two cars that are sort of at certain circuits, certainly at this circuit this weekend, the Alpine seemed to have a bit more of a rub of the green than the Williams did. But first time out, Victor Martins was able to really sort of get on top of Colapinto. So he sort of left going, oh.
Which also begs the question, are Alpine just knocking on Williams' door going, say, is this Luke Browning? Well, be him as well. This Victor Martins, can we, we've not had a French driver for 5 minutes. I think it's time to try that again.
Yeah, Alpine going, can we have the French driver back? And you know how we're just sort of slowly stealing all your juniors? Could we have the other ones?
Oh, no, you can take Colapinto. We don't want him now.
You can have him back.
It's not worked.
His loan hasn't worked.
Would you like Jack while you're at it?
Yeah, just going to Williams going, I'd like
him. Going, please, anyone, take me. Yeah. I don't want to be here anymore.
Yeah, just going to Williams going, I demand a refund. The Argentine you sold me, it's broken. And also you can take this Australian while you're at it. When was the last Australian to drive for Williams? Did Mark Webber ever drive for Williams? Or were we going all the way back to Alan Jones?
I did immediately go to Alan Jones, and I kind of hope it's not Alan Jones for the sake of, oh my God, that would be quite something. We haven't had that many Australians.
There haven't been a great deal of Australians. Let's see. Williams Grand Prix results. So, no, Mark. Mark Webber did drive for Williams in 2006 and 2005. So he would have been the last Australian to drive for Williams. Before him, we were correct with Alan Jones, 1981. There we go. Good pull on Alan Jones. Well done with that one. But yeah, the pace is still good for that Williams. The problem is that with Gasly poking around the top 10 and Alonso starting to get up there as well, it just means that that scrap for those sort of bottom end points is going to be trickier and trickier each weekend. It's going to come down to who's got the best car for the weekend as to whether or not Williams are in the points or whether...
Which admittedly, they didn't have the car at all this weekend at any point. No. So it kind of... a good weekend to do this because you weren't probably going to do that well anyway. But that makes all the other Grand Prix where you know you're going to have the car all the more important, a little bit like last year. And heck, the previous few years where they know that at certain tracks we're going to be on it. Look at Monza, for example. So we need to make hay while the sun shines because that's where we're going to have our Alpine Brazil 2024 situation of this is where we can net a few million in prize money if we play our cards right.
But crucially, it's not like they're lucking into like one or two races a season at the moment. Williams are at a point where they are sort of able to consistently identify a lot of weekends where they've got a car that can compete. So it's, again, the overall improvement of Williams over the past few seasons is still markedly there. It's just that it sort of now becomes a bitter pill to swallow when all of a sudden they aren't good because we know they can be. Meanwhile, over at RB, Hadjar qualifies 9th, Lawson qualifies 13th, finishes 7th, finishes 11th, respectively. Hadjar, for me, still top rookie of the class. I'm regretting picking Antonelli as my rookie backer for the season because...
Well, he still will be.
Oh, he still will be, just based on the fact that the Mercedes is more likely to score the big points. But I think Hadjar has been an absolute surprise. And yeah, Lawson more at home this time out, building up nicely. So I think the performance we're going to see from both these drivers is going to keep growing. I don't know, exponentially, but suddenly there's going to be growth and then we'll see what happens.
Well, it kind of tees up my point nicely of just saying that it shows why Racing Bulls can be a great training ground for new drivers. As long as they stay there, which is why I want them to both stay there for the rest of the season, regardless of what happens with Yuki. like you say, Lawson's feeling more comfortable. Yeah, he still needs to heighten up his overtaking so that it's less damaging to others around him. But the aggressiveness, the assertiveness, I like that. We need more of that with racing drivers because I feel like we've lost that a bit in Formula One, especially with the new generation. Piastri, he's the other kind of aggressive. It's more cold and calculated, but we need someone a little bit like Ricciardo in some senses, where you're gonna do those like last calls, but you can make it happen. And I reckon that's what he's probably trying to aim for, is that style of driving. But obviously he's not, he's more Fiat than Ricciardo at the moment, which is not what you want to be in F1 because you tend to go smash boom into various people and other objects, which is never too helpful. But yeah, Hadjar as well. Just very tidy and keeps doing what he's doing. And a little bit like Antonelli for me, when the news was broken that they were both moving up into F1, you and I were both a little bit on the fence about it. Both have been quite pleasant surprises, and we're quite happy to eat the humble pie for that one because ultimately that is what we want. We want the drivers that get promoted to be good in F1. We're just so used to seeing drivers get promoted that haven't deserved it or have not shown enough potential for us and then proven us right, that this seemed like another occasion of history repeating itself. And mercifully, with all of the rookies I'd say this year, but particularly these two, we've been proven wrong, and it's very nice because it means we might actually get some rookies that stay around for more than 5 minutes in the grand scheme of things, which we kind of need.
I mean, when it comes to eating our humble pie about Isaac Hadjar, obviously we've got season-long predictions. You and I both predicted he would
There's
have the most DNFs. You and I both predicted to have the biggest
still
tyre.
time.
Yeah. And you also predicted that Arvid Lindblad would be replacing Hadjar at halfway, which is only going to happen if they move Hadjar
Still
up.
could.
It's which t technically still
It
could, but
would
when
go
you
against what I want to happen, but it would work for what I also want to happen, so I get points.
It's the correct end result, but the mechanics and the pathway to it aren't quite what we're anticipating. But yeah, it's he has been a really pleasant surprise when he's moved up, and we know that he's quick. We know that he's sort of Hadjar on track is, I think, a more accurate representation of where Lawson wants to be. Very quick, very clinical, very clean cut, but.
It's the thing that we just won't know the answer to, unfortunately, is maybe he would have been had he started there or continued there even if he'd had a whole pre-season training program with Racing Bulls, had done the first few Grand Prix with him. Maybe that would have been why it would have happened, but we just won't know that, unfortunately.
Yeah, he's now got to start sort of working his way back up and rebuild his confidence. Maybe we'll get there by the end of the season, and seeing those two sort of race equally on pace will be a very interesting comparison indeed. Elsewhere on the list, we move down into what's that, fifth, sixth, seventh place. Haas. Behrmann qualifies 14th, finishes 17th. Ocon qualifies 16th, finishes 16th. And just a bit nowhere for them this week because just.
Sorry, Henry.
Yeah.
That's all I got for that one. It was odd at the end because at least one of the drivers was much higher up than where it then classified them as finishing. So I'm not sure if there was an off moment or if they got a penalty for something for God knows what. But it just it one moment one of the cars was running not in the points but higher than they were, and then just sunk down the order quite quicker than Verstappen's championship chances. And it was a bit odd, but again, they weren't really having a stellar weekend up to that point anyway. So, again, a little bit like Williams, you're not going to be there every track. And this definitely wasn't their strong point. Kind of amusing considering testing happens here a lot, and you'd think if you're going to maybe be doing better in one place than everywhere else, it'd be the place that you've already technically been to. But no.
Yeah, it's questions as to where the pace has gone, but I think ultimately it's tight at the top at the moment. We're certainly seeing that, and every now and then we're just going to have to deal with a Haas that isn't in that top 10. Meanwhile, speaking of cars that have made it into the top 10, not necessarily Gabriel Bortoleto, qualified 12th, finished 12th, really clean race from him. Excited to see if we're able to get a Sauber that's sort of performing around that mark if we're going to get Bortoleto moving up now as well. But Hülkenberg qualifies 15th, finishes 5th. Where did that come from, Nico?
Yeah, he's been saving that one, and there's so much fun stuff to say about it because As you were saying earlier about Hadjar scoring more points than Verstappen, which you may or may not have left in the edit, so listener, if he hasn't, that was something he mentioned earlier.
I will.
Hülkenberg has now scored more points than both Tsunoda and Lawson, and the pair of them combined. Sits ahead of both Stroll and Sainz in the championship, and because he's the only driver to have scored points for Sauber, that P8 is because he himself has outscored / outperformed Alonso, Stroll, Gasly, Doohan, and Colapinto combined. Not bad going for a guy in Hick, Stake, Sauber.
Yeah, for what is essentially
which
just
supposedly had a special pixelated livery that looked like the normal livery in every way, shape, or form.
Just a bit more cubic at points, that's all.
I'd take your word for it. Waste of money.
It
but
was.
I mean, if that's what you've got to do to get Hulk in P5, then fuck it, do it every weekend.
Keep the livery, away you go. Yeah, posting one past Lewis in the dying moments of the Grand Prix for fifth. Absolutely brilliant. And denying you a point too, because you said both Ferraris in the top five. Good quality from Gabby as well. Really set me up for double points for the team, which I think was my prediction as well.
It didn't happen.
No, so moot point.
I might not have got my bar prediction, but you didn't get yours either, so
yeah,
I can live with that.
No, zero sum. But it, yeah, just interesting that they got up there. They had a really good bit of strategy. This was, are we starting to see the touches of Jonathan Wheatley on this team really coming along and sharpening things up and sort of just pushing them to the next level? Is this the starting touches of Mr. Wheatley and his magic improvements? Or was this just a surprising weekend for Stake? I'm hoping it's the former, and we're starting to see a Sauber that's rebuilding, because Sauber as an outfit, ignoring kicks out, state kick, whatever the other bits are, Sauber as an outfit are relatively decent in Formula One. They've had some good results over the years, and you used to be sort of regularly in points contention. If we're going to see a Sauber that sort of for the final part of this season is back up there, just scrapping for P8, P9, P10 on a regular basis, that's going to make life a hell of a lot harder for the likes of Williams, Haas, and Aston Martin, and also put them in a really good spot when it comes to becoming Audi as well.
Does ruin their whole plan of getting the most wind tunnel time, though.
Yeah, there is also that on the other side of the same coin. So we'll see
the
how.
One amusing thing of the weekend, though, for me, I don't think it was the overtake on Hamilton, but it might have been, in which case it's even funnier, is camera was watching. Maybe it was when he was fighting Alonso and got past him at one point, but the camera panned to Binotto in the garage, and everyone around him is kind of cheering and going, hey. And he looks like the most depressed man in the world. And I just thought, has he just woken up and realized he's Matteo Binotto? It's the only kind of thing I can understand as to why he looks so sad right there, because I don't understand why he'd look so morose and just dejected in that moment. Like, good things happened. You passed the car didn't pass you. It's gone to plan. You can cheer up now.
Yeah, maybe in that moment he thought he was still at Ferrari.
That's possible.
Maybe for a brief moment he forgot he was no longer sat on the pit wall.
He looks at himself and goes, but we didn't get to see that.
Just sort of go, oh no, my team has been passed by the Sauber. This isn't, oh wait, I am the Sauber. Hey!
Son of a... Who did this?
When did this happen? But yeah, it's interesting times for Sauber, and I hope that it continues for them. Meanwhile, at Aston Martin, Alonso scored points.
Tale of two halves.
Yeah, tale of two very, very different halves. We'll start with the good news, which is Fernando Alonso, points. Hey.
Yes, finally. Interestingly as well, because he said he was obviously the one of the luckiest drivers kind of in Formula One. Colton Herta was also having an absolutely horrid season up until this weekend. I don't know if you've seen IndyCar, but I was probably. But he had a very good weekend, and it just happened at the same time that Alonso got points. And I'd said after the Indy 500 in the review, I think, that I did for that, that those two should just set up a little club and support each other. And then literally the next week, they both have stonking weekends by their own standards. I'm going, this is a new metric by which to measure performance by, and I need to keep an eye on that for the rest of the season, as long as they both kind of carry on. So I like the parallel there. When Alonso does well, Herta does well. I can work with this.
Have we got correlation, or is there also some sort of magical causation as well? We await to find out. Meanwhile, other side of the garage, Lance Stroll withdrew from the weekend after qualifying. qualify out of qualifying in Q2, and this was initially put down to his wrist injuries. Obviously, 2023, start of the 2023 season, he fell off his bicycle, fractured both his wrists, had emergency operation from MotoGP doctors, rebuilt his hands, back in the car, perfectly fine, but he's been suffering for a little while now. So obviously, Lance out in Q2, wrists are in a bit of agony after the cycling injury, and then it emerges through, Andrew Benson was reporting this for BBC Sport, that he lashed out in the garage afterwards. He didn't go and get weighed after his qualifying run, which he was supposed to do. He instead stayed in the garage and reportedly lashed out, damaged equipment, and swore at team members. A spokesperson for the team said Lance was upset, which sounds like a bit of an understatement.
I also just can't imagine him getting angry and someone being able to take that seriously.
No, Canadians and being angry, it sort of doesn't go together. The interesting bit then is that a second source for BBC Sport denied everything. So on the one hand, they're going, oh yeah, Lance was very upset. I just sort of had a bit of a lash out. And then a second source goes, never happened. You didn't see anything. Like, well, it's one or the other at this point. And apparently...
Or is it?
Maybe it's both. Maybe there's two Lance Strolls. We need to consider this. But yeah,
it's a frightening thought.
It's just a very, very odd weekend. And I think Aston Martin have confirmed that Felipe is set to replace him at Canada if needed, which means that he would be putting Formula One ahead of his Le Mans entry. I can't, who's he racing for?
That would be the dumbest thing to do. You could get a Le Mans win potentially, or you're not going to be able to perform too much in Aston Martin. That is terrible anyway. Just get Vettel back in the car. He said he'd be up for one-off Grand Prix here and there. Everyone would love it. You'd get a bunch of marketing off the back of it. And quite frankly, if Stroll's still not there because he's being taken to live on a farm, it could be kind of the best thing for us. And I don't even think the Canadians would mind, considering it's his home Grand Prix. I don't think they'd mind too much that he wasn't there.
Yeah, and Drugovich supposed to be racing Cadillac Whelan alongside Jack Aitken and Fred Vesti. He's sort of going, that's a decent
car. Prioritise that.
A decent car.
You got a chance there.
Yeah.
A better chance of a podium there than you would in that Aston Martin.
Around Canada, yeah. Aston Martin's other reserve driver, bear in mind, Stoffel van Dorn.
Who is also at Le Mans.
Flash, yeah, he's in the...
And they can't go for Jack Crawford. He doesn't have enough super license points. So they are in a bit of a bind if Drugovich decides... Actually, no, I'm going to go do Le Mans, which is why you bring back Vettel. Or, works so well on so many levels.
Or they do what essentially McLaren have the option of doing as well, which is...
Rio Hirakawa.
No, Valtteri Bottas.
It's like everyone.
Yeah, everyone gets Rio Hirakawa. No, they get Bottas back because he's obviously reserve driver for their engine supplier.
Vettel's more exciting. I've stuck with Vettel now.
Vettel would be more exciting, but
want to see Vettel and Alonso for a team just for one race. It's what we deserve. Bottas and Alonso, it's fine, but Vettel and Alonso at Aston Martin.
Yeah, yeah. We'll see. We'll see what happens. Either way, it's interesting, and I'm curious as to what the full story is there. Do we know anyone on the inside at Aston Martin? I don't think we do. Need to go and find some sources. Anyway, last on the list now is Alpine, and...
Smokeface, Jack Doohan still ahead of Franco Colapinto in the championships. That experiment's really going well for them.
Yeah, struggling to understand why they made that Colapinto swap, because it's not even close to the pace of the field at the moment. It's a tricky car, and Gasly is able to get the best out of it, the best not being a great deal anyway. But, I mean, all you've proven is the fact that maybe Mick Doohan was correct when he said that...
supposedly said.
Yeah. Supposedly said or has sort of made his points, and you sort of go, okay, yeah, that's an interesting one.
Yeah. You need to say much more. It's kind of results speak for themselves, as Yuki Tsunoda said, and definitely isn't regretting.
Yeah, unfortunately, Yuki Tsunoda's results aren't saying a great deal, and neither are Alpine's at the moment. So we might as well then move to our winners and spinners. Your winner, please, Timo.
Fernando Alonso and Colton Herta. Points in a clean weekend for both of them. I mean, you were going to get points anyway because of IndyCar, but he got lots of points. So very happy for both of them.
Yeah, better result than, Alex Palou, who got punted by David Malukas. And was it Scotty Mack who punted the young McLaren Nolan Siegel into the barriers as well?
Yeah, but you know, these things happen.
He then also got into a Twitter fight with it, with Tony Kanan as well, which is quite funny. And then obviously, oh, who was it who wiped out Frozenquist as well when his suspension failed?
Well, that I was to say that is nobody's fault because your
No,
suspension fails. Louis
suspension
Foster
failed on
was
one of
just
the
a
cars.
passenger at that
Yeah.
point, and you can't really do much about that. But, that was quite a nasty one. Quite interestingly, watching that and in complete synchronization with all three commentators, I also went, "Oh!" as you saw that all unfolding, and it was very odd hearing it in the headphones then, and also saying it out loud. It's like I'm there.
It's like I'm in the booth with them. Yeah. So Fernando Alonso, your winner. My winner, it's gonna be Nico Hülkenberg for that, really. Absolutely stellar performance. And what it's done for his championship prospects so far. Well, not necessarily a championship win, but certainly rocketed him up the standings. It looks quite fun on the big line graph when you look at where he was and where he is now. It's just sort of gone like, ooh, hello. That's fun. But yes, you are correct. Colapinto Pinto now still behind Jack Doohan. He has been since he entered the sport. And interestingly, Bortoleto moves up two places this weekend, despite scoring no points. His finish of 12th just is enough on count back to elevate him above both previous Alpine drivers. So nice stuff there. Spinners, however.
Go for Williams. I don't want to do it, but I kind of have to.
I think that's the problem we found ourselves in, is the Williams is good. So when they're not good, it's a problem.
You've started performing. I'm going to have to criticize you when you don't perform. That's how it works, I'm afraid.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's the bar you've now set yourself, James Vowles. Meanwhile, for me, spinner Max Verstappen. Honestly, I ex
No, he drove straight. He didn't spin. I don't know what you're on about.
funny. I do agree with George Russell on the grounds of I do expect better from him when it comes to his behavior. And yeah, I think also partly a spinner for stewards for really letting him get away with that one, because I think it should have been either a D, it should have been
It
more.
needs to DSQ from the race,
Yes,
at least.
no race result posted for car number one, because that was unsportsmanlike behavior of the highest regard. Predictions review: no points for pole position, 1 point for Timo for a Piastri win, 1 point for me for predicting Leclerc coming third, no points for fastest lap, no points for wild predictions. Interestingly, you made some changes while we were recording last time. You
Yeah,
had
I don't think I want to know how that went because I probably did better, did I?
you originally had Piastri on pole.
Yeah, I knew that.
You originally also had Norris in second. So there was a further.
Ooh, awkward.
Yeah, there was a further 2 points you took away from yourself there.
It shows the deliberate nature with which I'm playing this game just to try and help you and Ellie Mae along in the grand scheme of things, you know? I'm trying to be sportsmanlike.
It's not really helping me along, because
That's
it's
not why I can't do all the
you.
work for you.
I'm
You've
trying.
actually got to get some of these right yourself.
I'm
I mean,
trying, regardless.
silver lining, it went better for you in the predictions review than it went for your fantasy teams.
Oh God, I haven't even
You
looked at.
did truly awfully this weekend. I was scrolling for a while.
Oh no. Oh
Oh,
no.
yes. Oh, yes.
Oh dear. So Fantasy Formula One review with
Would you
Kevin.
like to tell the ladies and gentlemen how everyone got on?
If I must. For Spain, LeVictory, 254 points. F1 Main 3, 253 points. And Adesh Racing 2, 241 points. Meanwhile, when it comes to our teams, on the curbs, IndyCar, P4. Oh, God, how did you get that high?
No idea.
Undercut Podcast, not us, someone clearly a fan. P7. On the curbs, your other one, P12. The Dog Dads, P32. The
Ellie
Mixing.
Mae's highest one, P32,
Oh.
mind you, for Spain. Because I did these in terms of the highest, and that's why I put my second one looks like I'm not used to two of them being this high for a race weekend. It's usually just one of them.
Yeah, two in the top 15. Yeah, Dog Dad's P32, the Mixing Pot P35, and my hopeful heroes P63. What
Of
went so
63.
of 63 scoring 0 points? What went so wrong that they have no points?
Think you had one of the DNFs on double points, which definitely didn't
Oh.
help.
That,
And
yeah, if I
then your other
got like an Albon in there, that would have done the trick.
potentially.
Yeah, let's see. F1 Fantasy. There we go. Oh God. Yeah.
I was scrolling for quite a while.
112 points for Jaffa Cake Racing, Yuki Tsunoda, Charles Leclerc, George Russell, Esteban Ocon, Alex Albon minus 18 points. I can see that being a problem. Haas 6, Racing Bulls 35 for them. Team 2, Hopeful Heroes, Kimi Antonelli. Oh,
double points or just not, oh, and doubled as well?
Doubled minus 12. To get minus 24, Lando Norris 28, Alex Albon minus 18, Berman scoring a flat zero, Isaac Hadjar scoring 16, Haas scoring 6, and Williams scoring minus 8. Yeah,
that'll do it. I was scrolling through for Spain and I got to Robert Percy, and before I got to you, and I went, oh, that's not good, because he's still got two very inactive drivers in his team. And he's scoring some more points than you with all active drivers.
Oh, that's bad. Robert Percy scored 1 point and he's got Lawson and... I've cocked that up badly. That was not good for me.
Oh, you 2016, that like Mercedes.
Did all right-ish. 41st. We're scraping the bottom of a very worn out barrel, I will say.
You think you are Channel 5?
Yeah. And then, anyway, overall, as it stands, Lando, 1,803 points. Carlos Velia, Sam Zeegan, 1,688 points. And Dieter Tikkelas, 1,679 points. Can't Grow Moustaches in 7th. On the Curbs, P18. The Mixing Pot, P21. And Kiwi Burners, still P63. Yeah, that's all races. How are we looking? 21st, 41st, and 53rd. Ouch. It's another week.
That weekend didn't help you.
No, another weekend of dropping down for my girlfriend's team. Big reach. Ocon, Russell, Albon, Hulkenberg, Stroll. Oh, McLaren, Williams. Yeah. Yeah, Russell and Hulkenberg and McLaren really, really bumping them up there. 88 points for McLaren this weekend, 32 for Hulkenberg, 42 for a doubled George Russell. Hulkenberg outscoring George Russell is quite impressive.
Well, to be fair, I think with that, even though Russell finishes ahead of him in the race, you kind of got to give Hulkenberg points because no one's expecting him to be in P5.
Yeah, you get points for overtakes as well. And obviously, Hulkenberg starting in 15th to get to...
Yeah.
Is a hell of a
and Russell starting and finishing in the same place kind of buggers him a little bit on that one.
Yes, yeah, not a great points hauler. But anyway, there we go. That's all for this episode of the Undercut Podcast. We'll be back soon with a preview of the Canadian Grand Prix. Obviously, we've got a little bit of a gap in the meantime, and obviously, we've got Le Mans on the horizon as well. In the meantime, though, Timo, any more from you?
You can find me over on Instagram at On The Curbs, where I've got an interview with Anya Schmidt, another Rally Jamil participant, so go and check that out. And obviously I'll have an IndyCar review of the Detroit Grand Prix with my co-host Nate Woods. That'll be out tomorrow morning.
Lovely stuff. And in the meantime, if you want any more from me, you could, of course, listen to the Classic Car Weekly podcast. You could read Classic Car Weekly, or you can just find me on the internet at Jesse on Cars on most social media platforms. Give us a follow. I post a lot of pictures, mostly. Otherwise, we'll be back in about a week and a bit for a preview of the Canadian Grand Prix.